Welcome to another broadcast of Studying the Scriptures. I'm your host, Dr. Todd Baker, Director of Berit Hadashah Ministries in Dallas, Texas. Today we start a new study, continuing in the vein of our prior study, the Seven Feasts of Israel. Today we're going, and for the next couple of weeks, we're going to look at the eighth feast in Israel's sacred calendar. The eighth feast, which is mentioned by name only in the New Testament. Not in the Old Testament, but in the New Testament. And that eighth feast of the Jewish people is Hanukkah, or what's called the Feast of Dedication. The Feast of Dedication. Hanukkah is a feast that the Lord Jesus Himself celebrated, even though it occurred during the period of what's called the 400-year period of silence from Malachi to Matthew. This is what's referred to as the intertestamental period, because this was a 400-year interim between the closing of the Old Testament era and the opening of the New. So from Malachi to John the Baptist was a period of 400 years, called the 400 silent years. During this time, there was no supernatural revelation given, no prophets, no visions that were properly recorded and became part of the biblical canon. The biblical canon for the Old Testament ceased after the prophet Malachi finished his prophetic ministry. And so Hanukkah occurred during this 400-year period of silence. The events that led to the institution and commemoration of Hanukkah occurred during this 400-year period that exists between the Old and the New Testaments. And just because this period was silent does not mean it was not significant. It was. It was significant for Israel and the plan of God. Some of the events that occurred during this 400-year period of silence between the Old Testament and the New Testament were the establishment of the synagogue, the rise of the religious oligarchy in Israel, comprised of the Sadducees, the Pharisees, and the scribes. Also, the advent of the Roman Empire occurred during this period, and the universal language of Greek came to prominence during this 400-year period of time. But probably the most significant event in Jewish history that occurred during this 400-year period was the Maccabean Revolt, which Hanukkah, the Feast of Hanukkah, commemorates and looks forward to. So we're going to look at the historical development of Hanukkah, the historical events in Jewish history that created this institution of the feast, and we're going to look at its messianic connotations. Yes, Hanukkah, like all the other seven feasts, does have messianic overtones to it. And we'll be looking at that particularly with reference to eschatology or the last days. There are certain individuals and rituals associated with Hanukkah that definitely point to end times Bible prophecy. So we will look at all this as our teaching about Hanukkah unfolds. The word Hanukkah is a Hebrew word, and it simply means dedication, to set aside for sacred use. Dedication. And so the Feast of Hanukkah is so named because it commemorates the rededication of the temple, and particularly particularly the menorah in the temple. Rededication implies that something occurred to defile or no longer make the temple acceptable for holy use. And that's exactly what happened in the events that Hanukkah commemorates. The temple and the holy vessels used in temple worship were defiled, and subsequently they had to be cleansed and rededicated for the Lord. And so Hanukkah recounts the rededication of the temple and the Jewish people to the Lord after suffering martyrdom and persecution from what was called the Greco-Syrian oppression led by Antiochus Epiphanes in 165 BC. And we're going to see how this infernal man of history, Antiochus Epiphanes, the Greco-Syrian ruler of the Seleucid Empire, how his person and his diabolical acts speak prophetically of the coming Antichrist. He is a type of the Antichrist in his persecution of Israel in the last days. We will get into that in more detail throughout the course of this study on Hanukkah, the feast of dedication. Hanukkah then is a time when Israel rededicates itself to the Lord after suffering persecution for their status and position as God's chosen people. Hanukkah is a feast like the Feast of Tabernacles in that it is celebrated for an 8-day period. The feast occurs near the beginning of winter on the 25th day of Kislev. K-I-S-L-E-V, Kislev. And Kislev is the 9th month in the Hebrew religious calendar. Hanukkah begins 75 days after Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. And interestingly enough, Hanukkah has some similarities with the Christian celebration of Christmas that annually commemorates the birth of the Messiah, Jesus. Both occur on the 25th month of their respective calendars. Christmas, of course, falls on December 25th, and Hanukkah falls every 25th of Kislev. Gifts are exchanged on Christmas, and so gifts are exchanged on Hanukkah. Christmas, after the traditional celebration in England, is supposed to be celebrated for 12 days. So it's a multiple day holiday. And so with Hanukkah, it is a multiple day holiday in that it's celebrated for 8 days. Hanukkah is not found in the Old Testament canon simply because it occurred after the last Old Testament prophet gave the word of the Lord, and his book was recorded as prophetic. That would be the prophet Malachi. However, Hanukkah, or the events that Hanukkah commemorates and celebrates, is found in the Apocrypha, which is part of the Catholic Bible, the Apocrypha. And these are found in the two books of the Apocrypha called 1st and 2nd Maccabees. 1st and 2nd Maccabees are among the 14 books of the Old Testament Apocrypha, a collection of non-inspired Jewish writings written sometime between 200 BC and AD 100. The majority of Jewish and Christian scholars, ancient and modern, rightfully reject the Apocrypha with 1st and 2nd Maccabees as canonical or as part of the Bible. However, First and Second Maccabees are a valuable historical record enlightening us to the events that brought the creation of the feast of Hanukkah. First Maccabees was written about 100 BC in Hebrew, and it covers the Maccabean revolt. And the purpose in writing First Maccabees was to record the deliverance of Israel, which God wrought through the family of the aged Matthias, especially through his three sons, Yehuda, or Judas, Yohanan, Jonathan, and Shimon, Simon. And you can read them and acquaint yourself with what happened during the Maccabean revolt and how Hanukkah, in the end, commemorates these events in Israel's history. And they are found in any edition of the Catholic Bible, First and Second Maccabees. And I would encourage you to read them for their historical value, because they do tell us a lot about the milieu of ancient Israel during the time of the Maccabean revolt against the Seleucid ruler Antiochus Epiphanes, which brings us now to the historical origins for Hanukkah. And it began before the Maccabean revolt of 165 BC. It really goes back to the time of Alexander the Great. In 336 to 321 BC, Alexander the Great suddenly came on the stage of world history. At that time, the world was largely ruled, the then known world, or the ancient Near East, was under the rule of the Persian Empire. And Alexander the Great, a brilliant young military commander with his 35,000 men army, conquered Greece and then pushed eastward to challenge the mighty Persian Empire. With lightning speed, Alexander was to accomplish great military conquests, and then he challenged the Persian Empire in 332 BC. The armies of Alexander the Great defeated the Persian king Darius III at the Battle of Issus. Alexander the Great's meteoric rise to power and his sudden and spectacular military victories were all foretold in the Old Testament by the prophet Daniel, in Daniel chapter 7 verse 6 and Daniel chapter 8 verses 3 through 9. You can read there about how Daniel the prophet foretold the sudden rise and sudden fall of Alexander the Great and his military empire. By age 30, Alexander had conquered all the then known world, from Europe to Egypt to the borders of India. And with this great and unprecedented military accomplishment, Alexander unified that large part of the world under the universal cohesive bond of Greek culture, known as Hellenism. And with that, the Greek language was spoken in all parts of this vast area from Europe to India that Alexander conquered. Incidentally, that's one of the reasons why the gospel message carried by Paul and the other apostles of Jesus was so successful in penetrating different cultures and countries of that time. It's because all those cultures, all those countries were united by the cohesive force of the Greek language, Kyrene, the common Greek language, or the Greek language that the common people spoke, whether in Rome or in Alexandria or in Babylon. Everyone spoke Greek due to Alexander's influence and Hellenization of the areas, peoples, and places he conquered. Alexander's rise, mighty rise as a conquering general, was sudden and very brief, just as Daniel the prophet foretold. It only lasted 12 years. At age 33, Alexander the Great suddenly died without appointing an heir to rule his empire. Therefore, it was passed down to his four generals. His four generals divided Alexander the Great's empire. There was Seleucus. He ruled Syria and Asia Minor. There was Ptolemy, ruling Egypt. Lysimachus, ruling Thrace and Western Asia Minor, what is today known as Turkey. And then we have Cassander, ruling Macedonia and Greece. And so, after Alexander died, these four rulers ruled his empire for them. And there was warfare between all these four generals, their successors, vying for a complete defeat of the others and subsuming those regions they had once conquered into one empire. And Israel, of course, was caught between, because geographically speaking, Israel is strategically located between Syria and Egypt and Africa. Israel is the natural land bridge connecting the continents of Asia, Africa, and Europe together. So control of Israel at this time, as it was any other time, control of Israel was a strategic exercise to controlling that area. And it was the land of Israel, particularly along the coast, was called the Way of the Sea, Via Maris. And many of the caravans that traded between the three continents would travel through the coastal plain of Israel to get to Europe, Africa, or Asia. So whoever controlled that geographical location then controlled all the trade and commerce that went on. A very affluent business at the time. So with the death of Alexander, the nation and people of Israel found themselves at the center of a great battle for control of their land. And for over 200 years, Israel was caught between the imperialistic expansion of the Seleucid Empire, based in Syria, the Ptolemaic rulership, based in Egypt. And these two forces fought against each other in their desire to conquer and dominate the Middle East. Then in 171 BC, Antiochus the Fourth came, or Antiochus Epiphanes. He ascended the Seleucid throne in Syria. He was indeed a madman from all accounts given in history. Now let's talk about Antiochus Epiphanes for a moment here. Antiochus Epiphanes, his name from the Greek, literally means God manifest. So he believed he was the manifestation of the Greek god Apollo. And detractors of his gave him the nickname Epimenes, or madman. And so Antiochus wanted to unite his kingdom of many languages, cultures, and religions. He wanted them speaking the same language and engaged in the same religion. So he desired, like Alexander, to Hellenize the peoples, cultures, and languages under his Seleucid control to be speaking one language and worshiping one god, the god Zeus or Jupiter. And so he wanted to re-Hellenize and assimilate all of these people under this twofold objective, one language and one religion. And Israel became the center of his cruel fury. Why? Because they refused to give up their language and certainly their worship of the one true God, Yahweh. They rejected the polytheistic pagan religion of Antiochus Epiphanes. They rejected it outright. In response to this, Israel was split into two camps. You had the Orthodox party, who would rather be under the rulership of the Ptolemies in Egypt, since they were more tolerant and allowed for diversity under their reign. This would allow Jewish people to continue on worshiping the God of Judaism, Yahweh. And so they wanted to continue in this way. Then there was the second group in Israel, the more liberal and reformed group, who accepted Hellenism. This group included many of the aristocracy among Israel who had little concern for the religious traditions of their forefathers. They wanted to accommodate Antiochus Epiphanes so that they could acquire the social advantages of being involved with the modern civilization up to that time and the access to commerce and wealth which it could provide. And so there were two groups opposed to each other in Israel, the traditional Orthodox group versus the more secular and progressive group. And these two groups will become polarized with the interference and influence of Antiochus Epiphanes. Now, Antiochus was an aggressive general who did not brook any type of dissent whatsoever. And that would prove very harmful to the Orthodox traditional group living in Israel at that time. 1 Maccabees 1:15 says that the liberal and more secular group, they were considered to be apostates because they forsook the holy covenant of the Lord. In Jerusalem, Yohanan was high priest, and he was rejected by the Hellenistic forces within the nation of Israel. His brother, Joshua, was for the more secular and liberal faction that favored the Hellenism of Antiochus Epiphanes. He changed his name from Joshua to Jason. And it was Jason who then offered a substantial bribe to the Syrian ruler Antiochus to appoint him as high priest over Israel. He not only promised to give him a handsome bribe for this, but he also promised Antiochus to build a temple to the Greek god Phallus and a gymnasium where naked men performed wrestling events. He furthermore promised that the people of Israel and Jerusalem, more particularly, would be enrolled as citizens under Antioch and the capital Syria. Antiochus, no doubt, gave his consent. Jason became high priest, and he had his brother, Yohanan, assassinated. After this, Israel became a cauldron of civil war, and it was internally collapsing. 3 years after this, another Hellenistic apostate Jew by the name of Menelaus obtained the high priest's office by an even larger bribe. However, once he was in office, he was troubled that the temple treasury did not have enough to support the bribe he promised Antiochus. So he took the golden vessels from the temple itself to pay his bribe off to Antiochus. Well, in 168 BC, Antiochus Epiphanes was on the verge of defeating the Ptolemies in Egypt. And as he was about ready to finish off the Ptolemies in Egypt and take Egypt for himself, the Roman Republic sent an old and wise ambassador by the name of Gaius Popilius Lanus. He delivered a message from the Roman Senate to Antiochus, telling him to withdraw his armies from Egypt and Cyprus or consider themselves in a state of war with the powerful Roman Republic. Antiochus delayed his decision, stating that he needed to confer with his military council first. Tired of waiting, the Roman envoy then approached Antiochus on the beach. I believe it was in Alexandria. Gaius drew a line in the sand around him, around Antiochus, and said, "Before you cross the circle, I want you to give me a reply for the Roman Senate." This is where the metaphorical allusion, drawing a line in the sand, comes from. Well, Antiochus knew that his army was not big enough to war against the Roman Republic and successfully win. So in great humility, he backed down and he withdrew his armies from Egypt and left there. And so, angry and infuriated by this, he made his way to Jerusalem because there was rumors of a revolt there. Well, we'll continue our historical analysis for the emergence of Hanukkah next time. Until then, Shalom Yeshua HaMashiach Alechem. May the peace of Jesus the Messiah be with you.